gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the spirit and the power. Spirit, draw near. Let's do it once more. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near.
Good morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan on this Mother's Day Sunday. I'm Elke Lorenz and serve as your convener this morning. We welcome all of you to our service, especially those of you who are searching for a spiritual home. Many of us were once, too, seeking for something larger than ourselves to which we could belong, a sense of rootedness to hold us as we create meaning together. We do that well here, so not perfectly. In this congregation, we strive not for perfection, but for authenticity and connection. Whether it's your first time in worship with us or your 100th time, we hope that you will find here questions that stretch you, people to befriend you, and liberal religious values that challenge you to join us in loving boldly, living justly, and welcoming radically. We have the announcements in the order of service. I don't have any announcements to add. We have the UU World Travelers coming up on June 4th. Joey will light the chalice for us. We light this chalice for mothers and mothering to celebrate those who have taken on the task of nurturing a baby, child, or youth into adulthood and sometimes beyond, to celebrate those who have nourished the light of truth and compassion in growing minds and hearts, to celebrate those who have committed time, money, energy to the growth of others in this world. Our opening hymn is number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Please stand as you're able. We are now sharing important events in our lives. If you have a joy or sorrow to share, please wait for the microphone. Please wait for the microphone.
Hi, Linda Kreger. I went last weekend to Denver to see my oldest son. His band was playing in a music festival, and it was a blast. And Jess isn't here today because he has a job at Early Edition. First time he's held a job. Yesterday he worked 8.5 hours and it was graduation day. And today is Mother's Day, so he's wondering what employment's all about.
In Gene Severs. A big thanks to all who helped us celebrate Jessica's graduation, Michaela's graduation. Four years ago, I made a mixtape, and it was for both of their graduations. So the mixtape that I did said they're both their names. So anyway, other than that, I'm senile. But thanks again. And two of my immediate family were unable to make it with last-minute consequences. The good news is, in addition to this, is that my brother-in-law, Rod Osmond, is home. And they're not. They missed three Sunday churches in a row, which is quite a deal for them. But they're letting us, Dixie and I, take lunch to them today. So that's a good sign that they're accepting that. But one of the best feelings was standing there yesterday. It was so special that part of our family is a great number of this family. And I think as long as Michaela keeps like friends and family around, she'll do fine.
Well, I have a joy today that my grandma is here.
Hi, everyone. Molly McGoy. So I was able to volunteer on Wednesday of this week, I think, for the Eisenhower Middle School band tour. This is just a plug for volunteering in general. I really didn't want to do it, and it sounded insane. And the schedule was to go to 5 grade schools and have lunch and have a Penske truck full of instruments and music stands and literally 5 grade schools, a performance an hour. And so it was nuts, and I wasn't looking forward to it. And the whole day was just so incredibly inspirational. I got to be in 5 different grade schools in our community. Every single one was clean. Every single one was ready for us. Every single one was filled with exciting kids. The music was phenomenal. All of the EMS kids were loading and unloading. It was a wonderful day, and I think we should be very grateful for our school district here in town. And everybody go volunteer, even if you don't want to, because sometimes you learn things about yourself and about the community around you. So that's it.
Larry Weaver, I want to second what Molly just said. Last year, for example, I did a science day at both middle schools, and so I saw just about every seventh grader in Manhattan. Not everybody, but darn close. And like Molly said, these are good kids. These were attentive kids. They were polite kids. They were helpful kids. The doom and gloom that we hear is fake news.
Sandy Nelson, and I'll third it with a twist. I just completed a 22-hour stint with 7th through 11th graders, 15 of which, thank you very much, 15 of which came from, total, came, the kids came from Salina, Topeka, and Manhattan. And frankly, quite a few of those 15 had no interest in doing it, like Molly said, didn't want to come, wasn't really excited. Moms and dads and folks said, no, you're going to go. And lo and behold, they all had a blast. And it was really exciting to see those 7th and 8th graders and older teenagers just come together and have a wonderful time. And thank you all for allowing it to happen here. And wouldn't it be great, now that you got that volunteer plug, to let you guys do 22 hours another day?
We honor the joys shared and keep the joys and sorrows not shared in our heart.
One of the joys of ministry is the opportunity to help families celebrate new life in our midst. Today we have that opportunity. A child dedication ceremony does not cleanse a child of sin or commit the child to a particular theology. We don't believe that children are born with anything for which they need atone. A dedication does not open the door to heaven or save a soul from hell. The ceremony doesn't even make a child a Unitarian Universalist. That commitment can only be made when individuals are mature enough to understand and choose their own paths. And that's an important aspect of our tradition, making personal choices about our beliefs and commitments. Rather, our ceremony is an expression of promise and covenant to be lived in community. This ceremony is an expression of hope and solidarity and a recognition of family. However it's formed, it is a pledge of support and care. So this morning we dedicate, celebrate, and welcome to our community children from two of our fellowship's families. So I invite forward the Mitchell Phelps family and the Hoyt family. So parenthood is a blessing, and it's one of the most deep and profound commitments that you make in your lives. The connection that you have with your child only deepens and widens. Only deepens and widens as you move forward in your lives as a family. Parents, do you pledge to treasure these children? Will you nurture them so that they will grow to be loving persons and help them experience the gift of life? And to the members of this fellowship, do you welcome these children into our congregation? Do you promise to assist these parents to raise their children so that they can transform our world into a place that is more just, more equitable, and more compassionate? Now, to all the children and youth, do you welcome these children to join you in religious education and in all your activities? Will you be friendly to them and help to be good examples for them?
Yes.
Let's try that again. Will you be friendly to them and help be good examples for them?
Yes.
All right, that's better. We have here a bowl of water. Water is a symbol that's used in many cultures. It's a symbol of how life cycles and recycles. We rely on water. We need water for our lives, and it's why so many civilizations have seen water as sacred. And we also have flowers. So these flowers represent beauty, and we want beauty in our lives, and it's such a wonderful thing to have the flower unfold from the bud. Now, usually roses have thorns on them, but we've taken off the thorns because when our children are little, we try to protect them. We can't protect them forever. Someday they'll have to face the thorns, but for now we'll do without them. And so I'm going to do a little bit of little blessing here. Margot? Yeah, I'm going to give you the flower. There. May your thoughts be wise. Okay. I won't touch you with it. You can have it. I'll just say, may your thoughts be wise. May your eyes see beauty. May your lips speak truth. May your heart feel love. And may your hands do the work of the world. Do you want the flower? All right, let's try this one and see if it goes any better. Say, may your thoughts be wise. May your eyes see beauty. May your lips speak the truth. May your heart know love. And may your hands do the work of the world.
Thank you, and you all may be seated.
But I didn't have the microphone. Now is the time for Story for All Ages. So anyone who is young or young at heart. Oh, Arthur. Come on, Keaton. Come on, Kieran. Come on, Riley. Oh, Riley's in the front row. Sure. You do. I'm going to read a story today. You know, what is today? Mother's Day? A lot of people think you need a mother. A lot of people think you need kids. A lot of people think you need a lot of things. This morning, my kid called me and said, one of my kids is laughing because she knows what's going to say. And she said, from a strange phone number, said, "Hi, this is Lily. Happy Mother's Day." And I said, "Thank you. Tell me you didn't lose your phone." And she said, "I lost my phone." So, in her honor, I am going to read a book called Everybody Needs a Rock. Not a phone. by Bird Baylor, with pictures by Peter Parnell. Everybody needs a rock. I'm sorry for kids who don't have a rock for a friend. I'm sorry for kids who only have tricycles, bicycles, horses, elephants, goldfish, three-room playhouses, fire engines, wind-up dragons, and things like that. If they don't have a rock for a friend. That's why I'm giving them my own 10 rules for finding a rock. Not just any rock. I mean a special rock that you find yourself and keep as long as you can. Maybe forever. You think rocks last forever?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally could. If someone says, "What's so special about that rock?" Don't even tell them. I don't. Nobody is supposed to know what's so special about another person's rock. All right, here are the rules. Rule number one. If you can, go to a mountain made out of nothing but 100 million small, shiny, beautiful, roundish rocks. But if you can't, any place will do, even an alley, even a sandy road. Rule number two. When you are looking at rocks, don't let mothers or fathers or sisters or brothers or even best friends talk to you. You should choose a rock when everything is quiet. Don't let dogs bark at you or bees buzz at you. But if they do, don't worry. The worst thing you can do is go rock hunting when you are worried. Rule number three, bend over more, even more. You may have to sit on the ground with your head almost touching the earth. You have to look a rock right in the eye. Otherwise, don't blame me if you can't find a good one. Rule number four, don't get a rock that is too big. You'll always be sorry. It won't fit your hand right. It won't fit your pocket. A rock as big as an apple is too big. A rock as big as a horse is much too big. Rule number five, don't choose a rock that is too small. It will only be easy to lose, or a mouse might eat it, thinking that it's a seed. Believe me, that happened to a boy in the state of Arizona. Rule number six. The size must be perfect. It has to feel easy in your hand when you close your fingers over it. It has to feel jumpy in your pocket when you run. Some people touch a rock 1,000 times a day. There aren't many things that feel as good as a rock if the rock is perfect. Rule number seven, look for the perfect color. That could be a sort of pinkish gray with bits of silvery shine in it. Some rocks that look brown are really other colors, but you only see them when you squint and when the sun is right. Another way to see colors is to dip your rock in a clear mountain stream, if one is passing by.
Rule number 8, the shape of the rock is up to you. There's a girl in Alaska who only likes flat rocks. Don't ask me why, I like them lumpy. The thing to remember about shapes is this rock, any rock, looks good with 100 other rocks around it on a hill. But if your rock is going to be special, it should look good by itself in the bathtub. That rock looks like a bathtub. It also looks like a whale. Rule number 9, always sniff a rock. Rocks have their own smells. Some kids can tell by sniffing whether rock came from the middle of the earth or from an ocean or from a mountain where their wind and sun touched it every day for 1,000,000 years. You'll find out that grown-ups can't tell those things. Too bad for them. They can just smell as well as kids can. Rule number 10, don't ask anybody to help you choose. I've seen a lizard pick one rock out of a desert full of rocks and go sit there alone. I've seen a snail pass up 20 rocks and spend all day getting to the one it wanted. You have to make up your own mind. You'll know. All right, that's 10 rules. If you think of any more, write them down yourself. I'm going out to play a game that takes just me and one rock to play. I happen to have a rock here in my hand. Shall we go find some more rocks? Okay.
Oh, in love,
it is not only Mother's Day, but also the second Sunday of the month, Helping Hands Sunday at UUFM. Our donations today will go to the Boys and Girls Club of Manhattan, unless you specifically state on your check or envelope that it is for UUFM. Trent Jones will tell us about the work of the Boys and Girls Club of Manhattan.
Good morning. My name is Trent Jones, and I'm the Executive Director and CEO of the Boys and Girls Club here in Manhattan. Today, I just wanted to briefly tell you about Boys and Girls Club, what we do here in Manhattan, and then also state what we will be using your generous offerings today. We thank you for having us year after year here for Helping Hands Sunday. We are very appreciative and thankful for the funds that you give us each year. So Boys and Girls Club of Manhattan, we are a before and after school program for youth and teens, kindergarten through 18. We provide affordable, safe, and fun programming for children in the Manhattan and Wamego School District each day. Boys and Girls Club focuses on 3 priority outcomes, and those are academic success, healthy lifestyles, and good character and citizenship. So each activity we do with our members each day focuses on one of those 3 areas. And our overall mission is to enable and inspire all youth to reach their full potential as productive, caring, and responsible citizens. So here in Manhattan, in 2016, the Boys and Girls Club served 2,449 youth. Again, that's kindergarten through 18, so 2,449 youth. Of those, we saw 972 on average each day. So we have 9 total locations, and we see it typically around 900 to 1,000 each day after school or before school. We serve 30%. 30% of our club members come from single parent families. 14% come from military families. And we're currently serving 34% of the Manhattan District and 16% of the Wamego School District. So we see a lot of families needing our services and coming to us each day. So what we are looking for as far as funding right now, what funding will be used today that we receive, will go towards our summer program. So we're about to kick off our summer program. It's an 11-week program this summer, and we'll serve youth and teens every day from 7:30 in the morning till 6 at night. So we have them all day long. This year we're seeing a very, very high need from families, those on the lower economic side, of needing assistance and scholarships. So currently we have over $44,000 in requests for scholarships, and we have full intentions to award all of those families that have requested in order to get those families that need us the most into our programs and keeping their kids in a safe environment who would normally just be at home alone because their parents work all day and they don't have any means for other care. So summer scholarships would be an area that we would use with your help today, as well as transportation. So each year we have a routine schedule to get our buses and our vans up and running so we can take our summer kids to the pool on educational field trips here in Manhattan. We've gone to the Salina, Topeka. So your help would be designated to those areas today. And we thank you for your continued support to reach our mission. Because of people like you, we're able to serve youth and help them realize their full potential in the world. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. May means Mother's Day. We are trusting Hallmark and daddies and six-year-olds and grown-up kids who are mommies themselves to honor the mothers among us as they deserve to be honored, with flowers, flags flying, and breakfast in bed. Let's wish those mothers a memorable day full of love and laughter. Sadly, we don't trust Hallmark to remember the feelings of the women who don't fit Mother's Day in quite the same wonderful way. There are no cards on the rack for the women who gave up children for adoption, never to see them again. No cards for the women who faced a painful and difficult choice to end a pregnancy. No cards for women who desperately want to conceive and bear children and cannot. No cards for women who have lost children of any age, or for the women whose children have abandoned them in anger. There is little consolation for them on a day so full of motherhood and apple pie. Every year when Mother's Day rolls around, we wish there were just a little less hype about traditional motherhood and a little more acknowledgement of not-so-traditional mothers in our midst. People who come in all colors, shapes, sizes, genders, and ages. And more than anything, we wish there were a lot more empathy for those who suffer because mothers are being honored and they don't fit in quite in the same wonderful way. Let us honor them all on this day. Women who conceived, women who bore, women who reared, women who lost, women who let go, women who made different choices, and people of any gender who mother. Happy day. May each of you know your worth to all of us. We are now going to sing hymn number 298, Wake Now My Senses. Please stand as you're able.
Reading reminds us, Mother's Day is not as simple as Hallmark would have us believe. I read a blog post this week by a gay man who had been raised by a single mom.
He wondered how the child he might someday have with his husband would relate to Mother's Day. He didn't think of their child as having a mother in any conventional sense. And he talked about how he himself always sent his single mom both Mother's Day cards and Father's Day cards because he appreciated how she had played both those roles, yet he seemed still confused about exactly what comprised each role and what was different and similar about them. The weaving of gender roles and expectations in with parenthood has happened through time in diverse cultures in different ways. And today we live in a world that's kind of mixed, maybe in transition, where some of the gendered expectations have been tempered, but where we also know they are not completely gone, as some of us might wish they were. It's complicated, we say, about relationship statuses, and here we have a pretty basic relationship, that of mother and child, and it's complicated. We want to be careful about calling any human experience universal. Not that there hasn't been some helpful overgeneralizing. I've always liked Oscar Wilde's "All women become like their mothers. That is their tragedy. No man does. That is his." The truth is that each relationship between a mother and child, between a parent and child, is unique. We generalize at our peril. However, there's also something iconic about motherhood. And I'm not talking about cute miniature icons or something that seems somehow familiar. I mean the old, strong sense of iconic, relating to an image widely and deeply understood and revered. There's a reason why there are so many paintings of Mary and Jesus. And it's not only about Christianity, it's about how much people resonate with this image of mother and child. Carl Jung called it an archetype, this feminine figure with a child. And we may not fully understand the ancient times and cultures that offered mother goddesses like Isis, Sibyl, Demeter, Freya, Yamaya, and of course Gaia. What we do understand is the ideal of nurture and of fertility associated with a mother, some of it idealized and romanticized. And to keep our expectations realistic, we have to recognize this iconic mother has a limited resemblance to real moms. It is relevant to our lives, though. Something about this idea of motherhood calls us to a deeper understanding of how intimately we are connected with the world. Indeed, there are few human experiences that we can identify as universal. And one of them is being born. Not all of us have the experience on the other side of bearing a child, and not everyone who bears a child ends up functioning as a mother. But I feel safe in asserting that everyone in this room, every human on earth, in fact, has been born. And more than once I have heard from parents, mothers and fathers, that the most sacred moment of their lives was the birth of a child. It seems so improbable that somehow a baby forms and grows in a human body, and that baby somehow changes and adapts to the presence of, that the body changes and adapts to the presence of a tiny being in it, and knows when and how to change to deliver that baby, more often than not, safely into the world. Even the idea that there is a human being, a body that can be touched and cuddled and tickled, that can sense the world around it, that can feel and express its reactions, a human being that did not exist and then does. That's pretty astounding. Indeed, each of us is, as the psalm says, wonderfully and fearfully made. Now, I know that you use shy away from biblical proof texting and from the very idea sometimes that we are creatures, that is, beings who are created or made, because if there is a creation, must there not also be a creator? Maybe. To me, the important part of this is not that someone made me, but that I did not make myself. And here is what we know about the processes that brought us into being. Scientists postulate an early explosion, or perhaps more accurately, a sudden expansion, a big bang which sent matter tumbling through space, an event some describe as the birth of the universe. Matter at first was energy, then only the tiniest particles, far smaller than we can even imagine. Quarks and gluons became baryons, protons and neutrons. Hydrogen and helium formed, and the force of gravity began bringing together gas clouds and stars. And inside the stars, other elements formed. Planets emerged, and at least one of them developed this mysterious feature we call life. Life begat life, and in time humanity emerged, and each of us was born. Ken Patton, a mid-20th century humanist minister to Unitarian and Universalist congregations, put it this way: from the atom, galaxies of atoms swirled the path, becoming vast, inconceivable, a universe. The atom is the beginning of the human circumference, the seed of being wherein identity is manifest, that we are one nature. No barriers rise between the creatures and nature. Between all atoms is a ready path. All emanations rise to welcome us. Our minds course the universe with understanding. From the flame of the sun to the warmth of the human animal is one line of fire. Every atom addresses all the atoms of the universe, encompassing them in the aura of its being, permeating space. Each atom, whole in itself, conjoins with other atoms to enflower the molecule, the cell, the creature. The atom is the fuse of being erupting into a million forms. The atom is the seed of life, the germ from which creation rises. The planet, in steady warmth from an adjacent star, grows it into fertile gardens, sprouting the seeds of life, inhabiting the islands of the universe. Now, Patton was more poet than scientist, but I saw Larry smiling, so it can't be too far off. And Patton spoke frequently of natural religion, not in the same sense that the Catholic philosophers and theologians did, but in the sense that nature evokes in us a sense of wonder and awe that he considered religious. We UUs discover that in many of our sources, but most of all from our transcendentalist forebears, Emerson, Thoreau, Alcott et al. They offered us much of value. Emerson viewed perception, our own unique individual perceptions, the stimulation of our senses, as key to religion, as distinct from the revealed doctrines that had been handed down to us. And this paved the way for Unitarian Universalists to identify our first source as direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and to an openness to the forces that create and uphold life. And Emerson had a particular name for the transcending mystery he experienced. Anyone know it? The oversoul. The oversoul. Sometimes he used it interchangeably with God, with the word God. He described it, though, as a unifying force or energy, a structure in all things. For him, it was a sometimes mystical connection with nature. And his concept of it was influenced by his readings in Eastern religion as well as by his direct experience. The transcendentalists gave us UUs a reverence for the natural world, the world we are all born into. And here's a note of caution, though. The Transcendentalists were heavily influenced by the Romantics in Germany and England, those artists who extolled the value of emotion and of nature to the extent that they distrusted and criticized reason sometimes, and certainly the human world. So they saw this deep contrast between the natural world and the human world. And there's a problem with that. We human beings were born into this natural world in the same way that other mammals were. We are not distinct from nature. We are animals. We are bodies. We are matter. We are atoms. We are nature. When we forget that, we alienate ourselves not only from the world around us, but from our very selves, from our basic nature. Here's how the spiritually grounded psychoanalyst Gerald May put it. In our modern, highly developed culture, nearly all of us are estranged from our true nature and consequently from the nature around us. From the time we are little children, we are taught to set ourselves apart from our natural inclinations so that we can control, modify, and restrain them. We have learned to be suspicious, even afraid, of all forms of wildness. Some of us are unabashedly destructive of our environment. Others want to protect, manage, and be good stewards of our resources. Still others of us conjure up idealized images of nature, a pristine paradise when left untouched by human hands. And when what none of us seems to want, what we all resist, is to admit that we are inevitably, intimately, and irrevocably part of nature rather than apart from it. Now, it occurs to me that our Native American neighbors have something to teach those of us from European cultures about how to find this acceptance of ourselves as not alien from nature, as fully interconnected with it. And Robin Wall Kimmerer, a Potawatomi botanist, offers this comparison. She writes, imagine seeing your grandmother standing at the stove in her apron and then saying of her, look, it is making soup. It has gray hair. Now, we might snicker at such a mistake, but we also recoil from it. In English, we never refer to a member of our family, or indeed to any person, as it. That would be a profound act of disrespect. It robs a person of selfhood and kinship, reducing a person to a mere thing. So it is that in Potawatomi and most other indigenous languages, we use the same words to address the living world as we use for our family, because they are our family. So Kimmerer speaks about this as the grammar of animacy. To what degree do we consider various parts of our environment animate, living, valuable in and of themselves, rather than as a means to an end? Now, some people even have trouble treating other human beings as valuable in and of themselves. Yet somehow, these indigenous sources suggest we need to expand our hearts to include not only humans close to us and those far away, but also to include the natural world as our siblings, our cousins, our grandparents. For if we follow our family tree far enough back through the eons, we all grow from those same origins. That moment We call the Big Bang those emanations of energy and particles that become atoms and molecules and moths and mountains and peonies and rocks and cardinals and gorillas and us. Each of us was born of a woman, and each of us was born of a process that takes us back to the beginning of time. Human beings may have some awareness that other beings don't have, an awareness that we have been born and that someday we will die, an awareness that we live in a body that is temporary and will return to its sources. That knowledge should connect us to, rather than disconnect us from, the rest of the natural world. As beings who are born and have bodies, we form an identity, a sense of self, through continual conversation between our body and our brain. Electrochemical signals coursing through us continually, outside our conscious awareness. Just as the forms of energy flowing around us in the universe remain outside our awareness until we focus on them. Light waves, radiation, sound waves, and so much surround us. Outside our conscious awareness until a particular event focuses our minds on them. And the same thing goes on in our bodies. We have this stuff flowing through us all the time that keeps us aware of what's going on in our bodies and outside our bodies. And our bodies often know more of that external world than we are consciously aware they know. I mean, scientists will show that we react more quickly to things than we can actually consciously process. There are other kinds of connections there. And we know more of the outside world because we are a part of it. We are a part of that natural world. We are seamlessly part of it. Now, have humans disrupted the natural world? Of course, radically, tragically. We've changed the world in ways that make it harder for us and other beings to live here. The solution, though, is not to further separate ourselves from the natural world, but to realize our interconnection. We are born and we die just as other animals do. Take a moment now and notice that you are breathing. Notice your breath. The air that moves into your lungs consists of molecules that we don't even know where they come from. They've come from everywhere. And they've existed longer than you or I can imagine, longer than you or I will live. Bring your awareness to all the ways you, your body, is connected and interacts and relies upon the natural world. These are words from Sheila Schur, the DRE of First Unitarian Rochester, New York. Your breath began long ago, before there were lungs and before there were trees. Your breath began in the darkness of gases that hung a long, long sky from your song. Your bones are the bones of your ancestors, and before them, calcium in the seas. Your bones have been shaped in the darkness of wombs, and long before, in matter flung far from your fingertips. Your blood began in the flow of seas, dark and rough. Before your tears, there was rain. And before your blood, veins and springs and storms and the primordial deep, way deeper than your pulse. Your curiosity began as lightning across the sky. Your very nerves and every thought, every signal, the descendants of explosions and cosmic firings. Your insight and movement, ancient energies that acted long before your smiling. You are the very stuff of stars. You are the dust left behind. You are a solar event. You are the keepers of time. Your sisters hold their place and shine the sky above you, and you no less have such light inside you to offer the world. Can you see that you are a child of the universe? So, this Mother's Day, honor your mother, yes, indeed, however you might define mother, the people who have nurtured you and brought you to where you are, whoever nurtured and loved you, whoever shaped and taught you, whoever equipped you to live a full and healthy life deserves your gratitude. Yes, honor your mother. But don't leave it at that. Honor, too, the very world that has brought you into being. The forces and elements, the energy and matter. So much has conspired to create the unique being you are. Know that you are part of that creative cosmos, not apart from it. You are the very stuff of stars. You are the dust left behind. You're a solar event. You are the keepers of time. Your sisters hold their place and shine the sky above you, and you no less have such light inside you to offer the world. Can you see that you are a child of the universe? Let's join in singing number 27, I Am That Great and Fiery Force. As the Gaelic runes say, deep peace of the running wave to you, deep peace of the flowing air to you, deep peace of the quiet earth to you, deep peace of the shining stars to you, deep peace of the infinite peace to you. So may it be.